Hi, and welcome to the Data Engineering Podcast, hosted by Cynthia. I'm Jason Gould. I'll be looking after the discussion every week. We'll cover a host of topics like DevOps and tooling, programming languages, strategies, and all that kind of stuff. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy it. Hopefully, we'll catch you next time. Hi, guys. Welcome to this week's Data Platform Podcast. I'm Jason, as always. Tomo's here with me,
hello,
as you know. And today we have a special guest with us, Juraj. I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, guys. So basically, I'm a senior software engineer at Mindsmiths. We are an AI company that develops autonomous support systems.
That's, very cool.
I'm like 25 and whatever you else need to know.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll figure it out as we go. So I'm led to believe, and I'm going to admit here, I know nothing about this topic at all, that today we're going to talk about AI without data.
Yeah, so the idea is, so AI can be like a very powerful, very fun tool, and it's used to extreme lengths at Facebook, Instagram, to better target you as a person and to serve better content and so on. It's used in a fun way at companies like Tesla, where you have like autonomous vehicles. But there's like this whole part for that's very, where it's very hard to use AI. For example, healthcare, where basically if you make a mistake, you could cost someone their life. And it's like, how do you use an AI where you can't actually make mistakes? There are also like cases in banking and so on. And we said, okay, like we want to bring value to the world, and healthcare, banking, and like areas like that, like those seem that they could make a lot of sense for us. Mm-hmm. And banks have a lot of data. They have money, they can like buy great AI engineers, but still, at least from my experience, I haven't interacted with a lot of smart functionalities or like from my bank, at least. So, and the
we,
same,
we won't say who they are.
We won't say who they are, exactly. The same goes for like healthcare. At least in Croatia, I don't know that I have ever interacted with a system that uses AI that like concludes something and so on. So we said, okay, let's like revolutionize that. Let's try to see if we know there's potential. It's just like, how can we make something meaningful that will actually have an impact to the Croatian healthcare systems, to the end users, to the doctors and so on. Yeah, and that's what we're doing.
Cool. So I'm going to post another question. So I know how you build an expert system. I know how you train machine learning. You train it on the mountains of data, so to say. So how do you create a system that works without data?
A great question. So basically, you know, when you're like going down the stairs, you don't really think about how you're going to position your foot, what muscles are going to flex and so on. You just do it.
Correct.
And so that's something that's called tested knowledge. And the idea is, if you take the best doctors in the country, like the best experts, and talk to them about, okay, for example, we made Maggie an AI assistant for people with high blood pressure, like hypertension, and the idea was we took the best doctor in the country or one of the best and talked to him, okay, like how do you treat people, how does your day look like, and you would realize that person is spending 8 hours a day to see 20 to 30 people. Why? Because he needs to do a good assessment. He needs like 15 to 20 minutes per person. So like he's asking you things like, okay, I see that you have high blood pressure. Like what's the situation at work? What's the situation at home? Are you fighting with your spouse? Are you having some health problems? Are you eating healthy? Are you sleeping and so on? And it's just like, to be thorough, it's a very long process. And then, as I said, like he has access to 20 to 30 people. And we said, okay, if we could extract his knowledge somehow and use that as our base point, we could make an assistant that is at least as good as him. Mm-hmm. And that's the hypothesis.
So how does it work when you, because, you know, we work through and a doctor will have all of those standard questions that helps them make an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
But for every 100 patients, there's going to be that guy who has high blood pressure for a very different reason.
That the
doctor, knowing, you know, being sat in front of him, talking to him, will understand.
Yeah.
How do you get those sort of edge cases?
How do you implement experience
in
a non-typical case?
Yeah, so that's a great question because it's really hard.
Mm.
And that's why we started off saying, okay, we won't diagnose, we will monitor patients. So a regular patient would have this like paper notebook where he would write, I know, today is 8th of September, 10 a.m. I have this blood pressure. It's then 8 p.m. I have this blood pressure, and so on and so on. And then in 3 months, he would have a regular checkup where the doctor would say, hey, it seems that the medicine we're giving you is not working. Let's try something else, because every patient is like different. And the question is what medicine you need to give him and when does he need to take it? Because some people have high blood pressure in the morning, some in the evening, and so on. And basically, it is a process that takes around 3 months to properly diagnose, to properly medicate someone so that you hit their need. And what we did is we cut that down to, I don't know, 2 weeks, where, because since the person was connected to our system, he was talking to our assistant via Telegram. We would know if something was wrong and we would like let the doctor know, hey, this patient has still very high blood pressure. What should we do about it? So in the beginning, it's a lot of iterations with the doctor because like what you should do, what you shouldn't do. For example, we couldn't prescribe you another medication or something like that. We always needed to consult with the doctor and then he would take actions or we would like.
So, I mean, I assume then as a result of this, the doctor's having much higher quality time with each patient because he already knows that sort of history. Or is the goal to actually replace the doctor?
Okay, eventually? So it's not, the idea is not to replace the doctor. It's just, like, just as you said, the idea is to have doctor better use his time, to have him actually only be interacting with when he needs to interact and to leave all the boring parts to the system. The idea is, so it all started with us going to the doctor and asking him, okay, what do we do in this situation? What do we, can you tell us how you would treat this patient and this patient? And then he would always say, it depends. Like, what if a person has a blood pressure of 220 with, I don't know, 150, and then the doctor would say, it depends. Like, did that person just have a fight with his wife or something, and so on and so on,
or a panic attack or something like
exactly
that.
So what we did, we sent in like a psychologist and data scientist to actually construct hypothetical situations where they would then extract the doctor's knowledge. And they would then like build this model of how the doctor thinks. The idea was then, okay, we would take a real person who would using that knowledge, who's not a doctor, and they would use that knowledge and talk with the patients. So they would act as an assistant. So that person is usually from our company, and then they know what they can ask and what they can't ask to be an assistant like. So for example, they won't ask you, how are you doing today? Because that's so open
broad
question.
Yeah,
it's crazy to expect a good answer. That can be,
that
like,
means so many different things to different people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so taking that into consideration, our like product person that was actually interacting with the patient would then like see, okay, I'm now talking with 10 patients at the same time. And this is the situation that is constantly repeating itself, that is like so basic. For example, what's your blood pressure today? It's, I don't know, 120 over 60. That's the ideal blood pressure. Great, thank you. And then she would tell us, can we please automate that part? Mm. Okay, we would automate that part. And then it was, the situations would get more and more complex over time. Mm. And at the end, we would actually have an assistant that had the ability to send someone to the emergency room. Mm. And that was like crazy, thinking, okay, if I don't send someone to the emergency room that should go to the emergency room, I could potentially kill someone. And if I send everyone to the emergency room, I'm going to like burden the healthcare system.
You're going to block them, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea, and what we did actually, is we would always have a person supervising the assistant just to make sure everything is fine. It's called the human in the loop. It would, and then it could actually, the system would recognize if a patient says something that the system can't handle, and it would forward it to that person, to that human in the loop. And then the human in the loop would act upon, like, for example, if the system asked the patient, what's your blood pressure today? And they said, it's 120/60, but I'm coughing blood.
Yeah.
It would be very unintelligent for the system to
say, great,
yeah, that's fine.
Perfect, thank you, have a nice day.
Yeah.
So
enjoy.
The system would say, I'm not recognizing this situation, and the human in the loop would take over and then continue the conversation. Mm. And that's the reason why the patients didn't actually know that they were talking to an AI system, that they would think that it's the real person behind. So you would have people congratulating Christmas, sending pictures with their grandchildren, saying, hey, Maggie, like, I'm like, sending them flowers and heart emojis and so on. It was like really awesome. Actually, I suggested that one of our KPIs should be, how many emojis do we get?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It was denied.
That's really cool.
But I was very optimistic about it.
So obviously this is, most people would choose to start with a sort of financial system where if something goes wrong, the only thing you lose is money, because that's just a number. Actually, starting with patients and actual people's health on this is super brave.
But I'm
really impressed with.
Yeah. And I've heard the human in the loop. I've seen human in the loop, for instance, in fraud detection systems. Mm. You always, in fraud detection system, they usually result, 95% of them, or at least all that I saw, they result in raising alerts. And then raising alerts, you have human in the loop.
Yeah, that's like very common for betting companies.
Exactly.
Like when someone, bets. Mm. But anyways, yeah, so the idea was, so just a little context, medical books don't really agree on a lot of things. So. You can't get something that's really like, okay, this is the fact of the nature. So we always relied on the experience of the doctor, but he as well like would say it always depends. It's this, but it could be also that and so on.
Yeah, I mean, you always have this in life, isn't it? This is the rule.
Yeah.
Except.
Why?
There's always exceptions.
Yeah, but the idea is, okay, if we have this system on... So this was a pilot project. It was like 100 or something patients. But if we had tens of thousands of patients, we were actually collecting data that would help us then better the system.
Mm.
And because at this point, we actually had a logic that would actually track what your blood pressure is through history. And then when you submit the new blood pressure, we would know if that's something that's okay for you or not, because something that's okay for you may not be okay for me. And that's something that if, as you get more and more data, you can actually disregard what the doctors say and just trust the data. But at the end, the idea is the doctor now doesn't talk to 20 patients. He can cover 1,000 because he will only be asked for emergency situations that are not typical.
I have an engineering question. So the assistant asks the patient over Telegram, how are you feeling today? Mm-hmm. What's your blood pressure? So then I guess people write everything in words or in numbers. They use different things to separate the two numbers, the first and the second one. So I guess that from engineering standpoint, the main issue that you have, I mean, the main focus was data quality, or how to make sense of the data that people are sending.
Yeah, so there are three areas where we like fight. First one is knowledge engineering, where you need to engineer the doctor's mind.
Mm.
For example, when you cross the road, you don't think, is the car approaching me? What is the light? What's the speed of the car? And did I make eye contact and so on? You just think, is it safe? And am I allowed to go over the road? But in your subconscious, all those variables come into play, and a knowledge engineer would tackle that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not scalable to actually check every variable. There needs to be meta rules, like meta conclusions and so on, that then lead to a final decision. But what you said is completely, absolutely true. So first we started with this hypothesis. We will tell you the format at which what we want you to write, and then that just wouldn't happen. So people didn't use slashes, they used dots, they used spaces, and then you support that as well, because why not? But then they would start sending them in different rows. Then they would say, they just wouldn't write the blood pressure. They would say, good morning, Maggie. Today, my blood pressure is
fine.
Yeah,
something like that. And then they would say, so in Croatian, systolic blood pressure, this. Diastolic blood pressure, this. Pulse, this. And it just kept getting crazier and crazier. It was like 0.1% of the cases, but you had to cover that.
Yeah,
at the end, like, the nail that, like, like, it was crazy. Someone wrote, hey, Maggie, just to let you know, my medicine changed. Now I'm drinking, I know, 200 milligrams of this, 100 milligrams of this, and and then you're thinking this is actually blood pressure.
200 over 100, and that's already something that you should visit the doctor or call an ambulance.
Exactly, and those are the situations that no system can actually like handle. You need to have a real
human
person
in the loop.
Exactly, because it's super easy for us humans, but it's not that easy at all for systems.
No, and I think that, but on the other hand, the amount of data that you collect with those questionnaires and with that interaction with your assistant is very valuable to the doctor, I can imagine. Because otherwise, you know, people come to doctor's office, then they start saying things that are maybe, you know, they forget what happened. But you, with your assistant, you have last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
you have
exactly
all the data, so in the morning, in the evening, so he knows everything.
What the doctor found very valuable was actually like our visualization of the data.
Yeah,
so we would like make graphs. How are the blood, how is the blood pressure in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening? Are there any pain, like are symptoms like chest pain and so on? So that's, that switched the doctor's perspective from evaluating a piece of paper for 2 minutes and not really getting a good sense of it to like 5 seconds. But it's like a very iterative process.
This is very cool, and I guess that, you know, with people, instead of writing their messages in different formats, crazy formats, they could also wear some smart watches or something like that, and that would be even easier for you to collect precise data.
Yeah, exactly. That would be awesome. The problem is just like, I don't know if there's any smart device that can actually pick up blood pressure.
Apple Watch.
I know,
but I don't know how accurate.
I know that it's certified for pulse, but I don't think it's
not
certified
for
blood pressure.
I know mine, the one I have that I wear every day. I haven't worn in 4 years. I know that one does pulse, but I believe the new one.
Yeah,
it's also a blood pressure. But on the other hand, I mean, those blood pressure devices, I saw them right now, last time I was kind of checking out on medical equipment. It was a small device that already had like a Wi-Fi connection, and you know, you just put it.
I have the old school. I have a cuff.
Yeah, and you have like a bump.
No, you press a button and it.
You have a button. Okay,
you know, so it's a bit newer than the 1800s.
But. Yeah. that one would be super cool, so people would like send immediately. I mean, I would use the same channel connected to Telegram. Why not?
Yeah.
Super.
I mean, and Telegram actually has like this awesome API. It supports a lot of things, and we were like, okay, no one uses Telegram, but does a lot of things really good. We did an assistant on WhatsApp. And that's just a painful experience.
Yeah, it is painful because you always have to sync on different devices. I use Telegram all the time. I like it a lot. It's super small.
I haven't used it in a few years. So how do you get on with people actually using tech? I mean, I would imagine that there's probably a lot of people who are not that exposed to technology. I mean, if I look at... I was going to say my parents there. Actually, if I look at my dad, my mum's all appled up to the eyeballs. She has every device you can imagine, Bluetooth speakers and everything. She's obviously in her 70s. My dad, though, can't, you know, the washing machine eludes him. How do you get on with that element of it?
Yeah, so it's just, okay, so when a patient comes, we cherry picked patients so we could have a wide range of situations. And the nurse would actually educate them. First, they would help them install Telegram and then connect to Maggie. But then they would educate them, like, you need to do this and that. But so basically, a person needs to know how to write some numbers and then click some buttons. It's not, but as always, since a lot of the users were older people, you would have messages in caps lock and so on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something that you just live with.
Yeah. Cool. It sounds very cool. So have you got any plans to do anything outside of sort of healthcare? And you mentioned finance as well.
Yeah, so we're working with some bank here on assistant for to help better to help build customer relationships. So I know if any one of you is using Revolut, it's basically very simple to use it. It's like everything is so easy. But and I basically, when I get my paycheck, I transfer most of it to Revolut and then just use a Revolut for everything.
Me too.
Yeah.
And
I have different experiences with them, but I won't go into that.
But your experience is actually functioning as designed. You are an occasional user that got flagged because of your behavior.
You're a fraudster.
So
yeah, I've been flagged as a fraudster and my account was blocked for 30 days without any option of contacting them.
Yeah, it's
except
crazy
for the chatbot. That part should change.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't
have
problems with me
number.
Being flagged. That's the rule.
Yeah.
That's the rule engine, so it's okay. It works.
Mm.
I want to be on a platform that detects fraudsters.
Yeah.
But the communication, non-existing communication, when something goes wrong.
Yeah, their customer support.
Yeah,
is
it shouldn't
awful.
Be like that. Yeah.
And that's something that we are really careful about. So.
Yeah.
Your experience may vary, and not everybody has had an awful experience with customer support at Revolut. Just want to put that in case anybody from Revolut's listening.
Okay. We'll cut it out.
No, what I was saying, for example, in a Revolut, you have that situation. You have a chatbot, and it's really frustrating.
Mm.
And you're very careful to not turn out to look like chatbots. So. Because when I recognize that I'm talking to a chatbot, I just want to get out of there. I'm clicking whatever. I don't know if the chatbot can help.
Mm.
Just get me to a real person. And that's why human in the loop is very useful.
Yeah.
In those like marginal situations, it can make you like question yourself. Like, is this a real person?
Yeah, just get me to a real person. That's
exactly.
That's very important.
Yeah. I mean, I have a similar experience with some of these automations, and it's just like, you know, you can tell it's a scripted standard response because I'm just like, well, that had nothing to do with what I said, and a human would have recognize that.
React differently in most situations. Not in all of them, but in most of them, yeah. But you mentioned also cases for building better customer relations, which banks definitely need.
So the idea there was, okay, banks have they're trying to reduce their churn rate and they need to actually have people feel like their bank cares. For example, if I had any financial problems, I wouldn't go to my bank and say, hey, I need help, can you help me? So the idea is...
We're doing really good today on...
bashing.
On our...
different industries.
Our business relationships.
But yeah, so the idea is we want to help banks educate people so they don't have to pay fees that they don't actually need to pay, that they better understand how some products can help them or like affect their financial status. And what we're working on now, we actually have this team that goes around and records people and like in interviews where we find out what kind of biases people have around some products, and then we see how we can address those, like, can we somehow educate them, can we somehow make things easier for them. For example, I'm a very biased person there as well. I'm like conservative and everything, but then I had this one of my colleagues that was in the banking industry sit down with me and tell me, okay, now we're going to spend half an hour so I can understand that, so I could explain to you like how this product can actually help you. And then half an hour later, after all the graphs, all the like talking, I said, you're right, like I need to change my behavior. But I'm lucky to have like someone like that in my life, like, but most of the people don't. And we are trying to educate people and to finally have them feel like their bank cares. And we were also like doing some projects for a telecom in Croatia and in retail.
So in retail, I see a great case for that with fulfillment. Yes. Smart fulfillment, automatic fulfillment. Yeah, whenever we create, we are now the clients for the certain coffee producing company. And since they were nice enough to give us a huge coffee machine, because we work two coffee machines, because we work on caffeine mostly. This like is we are turning caffeine into code. That's the motto. And the automatic fulfillment for that is actually great. I saw some rules there where they are like analyzing what we are consuming and then suggesting new things. And I think that's it's a smart engine. It's not a chatbot, and the automatic fulfillment as a repeated process.
It's pretty cool.
Is super cool. I know a lot of companies with their supply chain management and order management that could benefit a lot from such an automatic system.
Yeah, I mean we're taking aside the software part. We're also like focusing very much on guidance. So if we say there is, you can do something like out of empathy. So I recognize that you, are craving sugar. I can give you sugar and then you crave more and I give you more and I give you more. It's not actually good for you, but like I'm making you happy. But you're focusing more, okay, how can we guide you and do the best thing for you? And the idea, in retail is we actually want to help companies empower their company culture and make people in the company happy. And then we recommend different things, we optimize some stuff and so on. And we basically make the company not worry, if I have enough of something.
So guys, we've just hit the half an hour mark.
Yeah. Let's leave something for the next episode.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely.
And I think that you can already announce the next episode and the topic that you're going to.
I actually don't know what I recommended for like, the two topics.
Here we go. Typical engineer. Yeah. I can't remember what I said yesterday.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or this morning, but so, it was something very smart.
Yeah. If only I could remember it, I'd be a millionaire.
Yeah.
That's true. No, like this is actually like really cool. This is actually my first.
Using data in microservices architecture.
Yeah, I'm not
sure.
That's
actually a cool topic.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's a hard topic for me actually.
There are so many differences of opinion on how to achieve that in the best way.
Yes, I completely agree.
I've had so many arguments on this topic in previous companies I've worked for. Where is because you can solve that in so many different ways.
Yeah.
I can't say that I'm any authority on that, so I can only like share my experience using data in microservices.
This is the channel for that.
Absolutely.
We are not trying to find the solution how to dissolve monoliths and turn them into super modern microservice.
Although we may have some opinions.
We have some opinions, stronger or...
Maybe I should actually interview the both of you to learn something.
Yeah.
But we are actually pivoting a bit to... So we've been developing AI systems that like help others, but now we want to build a platform that will empower other companies to do the same thing. Like that, okay, we help you with the code, but we actually help you with the process of achieving your goals. And now we have to question a lot of things. It's really crazy.
Yeah, you don't make a lot of friends on that journey.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's important that
you realize that any decision you make will be wrong, then you're good.
Yeah, well, I came to that a long time ago. I haven't made a correct decision in about a decade.
Yeah, it's still rolling.
Yeah. I'm still counting.
Yeah.
I've got a calendar up, days since last good decision.
Yeah.
Days since accident zero.
Yeah.
Probably it's, yeah. That's the nature of things, I guess.
Cool. Well, thank you guys both very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh,
thanks,
Yuri.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's nice to have guests.
We'll definitely be speaking. It's nice to have somebody from outside of
Cynthia
with us.
Yeah,
it's really like cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you very much, guys, and we'll see you next time. I'm sure we'll think of a topic between now and then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.